shot his wife as she was cleaning up the kitchen after lunch. When his 10-year-old son came to investigate the commotion, the father shot him too. His 6-year-old daughter had the good sense to hide in the bathroom, but reports suggest he lured her out by telling her it was just a game. The girl was found shot once in the chest from point-blank range. The mother, who was shot in the stomach, was pregnant at the time. Police arriving on scene after neighbors called 911 found the father in his car listening to the radio.
Welcome back to yet another episode of the Main Quest podcast. This is, of course, the number one retro gaming podcast that hopes your mother isn't sucking cocks in hell. I'm going to let that one ride out for a second. starting strong today. That's from The Exorcist, in case you didn't know. Anyway, as always, I am your host, Keith, and here we are. It is the fourth year of the Ghoulcade, and I'm incredibly excited to kick this month off with today's episode. And of course, I have returning guest, Phil of Deleted Saves, with me to talk about this game, this PlayStation 1 classic, or at least I've heard it's a classic. But before we get into that, if you would like to support the show and get more content this month, more spooky, spooktacular content, like a bonus episode on a Flash animation called Simon's Quest for Relief, or perhaps you want an episode on the Earthbound Halloween hack, which I recorded with my buddy B-Ross, or at the Super Garbage Day podcast, or perhaps you want me and Ryan talking about House of the Dead 2, the 2005 film noir classic House of the Dead 2. And I also think I'm uploading a Main Quest Hall of Fame episode, which I'm trying to determine what my top 10 games of all time are. So if you like list-based episodes, you're going to love those. And you can get all of that stuff over at patreon.com/TheMainQuest. Or just check out the link in the show notes. And as you will come to find, there is a tier that includes shoutouts, and the people exclusive to that tier are Eric Guess, Zero Sam, Kayla Jackson, David Palafox, Van Fernal, Chris Kilpleen, and Ashton. Thank you guys for your continued support. Really couldn't do this show without you. I wouldn't have the confidence to put out all the content that I have over there on patreon.com/TheMainQuest. No, seriously, though, I love going all out in October. There's a ton of stuff dropping on the main feed here, ton of stuff dropping over on Patreon. It's my time to shine, man. I love this stuff. And so, Nightmare Creatures, this is a longer episode. I love having Phil on. He's an endless well of knowledge. The way he sets up the story, the events that take place in Nightmare Creatures, which there's not a lot that actually takes place when you play this game. Everything else happens off screen. And his depth of knowledge of not only the real history, but also kind of the rewritten history that this game does, the way he's able to parse it out and go through it it's incredible. It's very impressive. And really kind of helped me appreciate this game a little more for what it is. And so we talk about a lot of historical things. We talk about beat 'em ups as well, as this game kind of has those mechanics, and a couple of other horror tropes, as well as what exactly this game falls in as far as genres go. So yeah, I couldn't think of a better way to kick things off. Coincidentally, this is the second year in a row in which Phil has come on and helped to usher in a brand new year of the Ghoulcade. So I hope you guys enjoy this conversation about Nightmare Creatures.
Thank you. Yeah, I've done this before. No, I think I should be okay. I think I kind of know what's coming, so.
Oh, do you? Okay.
I may be wrong. I may
we'll
be wrong.
What happens.
But we'll see. Like I said, I kind of know, I think, what I want to talk about this, and we'll go from there, see how you feel. See how you're feeling on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely interested to hear what you have to say, considering you've covered this before, and you were a little, like, kind of down the middle with it when I listened to your episode. Like, you didn't really, like, admonish it, or but you didn't praise it either, so...
well, I don't think my opinion has changed too much in that, but I have some new information that I've discovered, just kind of reviewing it, that I think I need to bring to light that I didn't in my original review, that could maybe affect things now.
Sure. If you're ready, I'm ready to get started, because with this new show format, we just blast right into this shit, so.
I'm good to go, yeah.
All right, man. So at this point, I mean, you've probably already heard us talking. I'd like to welcome a familiar voice to the show, officially a reoccurring guest now and friend of the podcast. Also, coincidentally, like this happened by accident. I didn't mean for this to happen. Second year in a row where he has opened up the Ghoulcade. Welcome back to the show, Phil of Deleted Saves Podcast. Welcome, man.
Thank you, Keith. I'm glad to be back as always. This is my official returning guest spot. So you were the first to actually invite me back of the many shows I've been on, and I thank you very much for having me back.
Yeah, it's always a good time talking to you, man. You're very knowledgeable in the stuff that you know, and as we get into the story of this game, I will have a lot of questions for you. So, but before we get into that, since you are a reoccurring guest, we can skip all of the biography and the questions of who the fuck you are, what your favorite game is, all that stuff. So I have one question for you, and that is, what you've been playing?
Oh my goodness. Well, I got as my annual name day has recently passed, it's one of the times of the year I get my game collections come in large bulk packages. So of lately, I completed Dredge, which is a wonderful, I'm delighted in, it's a very short little indie game. And it is Big Bass Pro Fisherman meets Call of Cthulhu.
What?
And it is absolutely delightful. So I'll give you the rundown. You play literally a fisherman in the 1920s who goes to the small fishing village to take a job, and you have to live and die by the light. Unless you want to go in crazy, don't go out at night. You're going to be pulling up all kinds of twisted and horrible abominations out of the sea. You're going to go around dredging up parts of old ships and repurposing them to rebuild your new ship. You're going to be floating to various islands and maybe collecting parts of a, lack of a better term, a sort of spell that will either destroy the world or ruin your sanity, or you may have to get something back to stop whatever's going on.
So how often are you stopping in the middle of this quest just to fish?
Fairly often, because fishing is actually the source of money.
Okay.
So by selling fish routinely, you don't have to worry about eating, sleeping. Well, you'd have to sleep to regain your sanity. But to make enough money to buy new parts, ship upgrades, corrective measures and things like that, you do have to fish. But you do get to figure out, like, you have to buy various types of fishing equipment. So crab pots you can dump and come back to. Various rods, you can go into the shallows, the coastal lines. If you get enough big stuff behind it, you can go deep sea fishing and try and pull up whatever you can out of the depths. There's a special brand that you have to go to the volcanic island to keep your lines from setting on fire and picking up, you know, fish there, et cetera, et cetera.
So is this more like genre-wise, like kind of like almost like a simulator type of game, or...?
It's a fishing sim survival horror.
Okay, I gotcha.
But like more like the survival horror of, like, say, an Outlast or an Amnesia, where you don't really defend yourself so much as you, if the big thing is chasing you, you hit the hammer on your ship's accelerator and you get out of there. The other game I started playing is Callisto Protocol.
Yes, I did see you tweet about that.
I did, and I have bad news for the larger YouTube community. It's a good game.
That's what I have heard.
And I'm going to be rubbing people's faces in it.
Friend of the show, Ryan, from Listoff, he played it, and he was also like, what the hell is everybody talking about? This game is just fine.
Yeah, no, is it groundbreaking in survival horror? No. The big thing, I think, is the combat mechanic, because in this game, you have to have a melee weapon, and you have to dodge left or right as enemies swing at you and bash the hell out of them. But as soon as you start getting guns, you can draw mid-combat and start annihilating them. I have several firearms. I could distance take them like any other survival horror game at this point. Ammo's a little harder to come by. I'm beginning, my formulating idea is, as anyone's listening to the show, I have big feelings and big thoughts about the Dead Space series. And especially Dead Space 3. I've talked about before how I felt that game should have gone, what we received versus it, and my overall disappointment with the climax of that series. My current thought on Callisto Protocol is, since it is not the Dead Space 3 I felt we should have gotten, I think this is the Dead Space 3 we could have gotten, which probably would have been a much more satisfying conclusion to that trilogy, if nothing else, by complete accident. Again, you were on your Callisto Protocol. You were on the moon of Jupiter, Callisto. You're in an old prison facility. Eventually you have to break out, and I'm walking across the surface in a full, you know, exosuit in a hideous snowstorm on an alien moon. And I went, wait a second. I've been here before, but this is already playing and acting a hell of a lot better than the last time.
Yeah. That's the thing, right? That's the thing that ruined kind of the commercial success of the game, was the expectation that, oh, these are the former developers of the original Dead Space. And that game was a big deal when it came out, especially when EA was just shoveling out absolute garbage. And all of a sudden, this Diamond in the Rough came out, Dead Space, and kind of shifted expectations a little bit. And
yeah, exactly.
That's what people thought Callisto Protocol was going to be. They thought it was going to be another game changer, but
I mean, let's be honest, a lot of time has gone on between 2008 and 2023. The original Dead Space, I mean, shit, they had no expectations. EA was like, all right, Redwood, fuck it, just produce this thing. We need revenue. We're about to shutter your doors. Just shut up and do something. We're not going to be involved. And they managed to produce this. You know, what would have been something else had Resident Evil 4 not come out. And essentially, Resident Evil 4 set in the Aliens timeline. Not Alien, the first movie. Aliens, the second one. The much more action-y one. And I went, this is perfect. I love this game. You know, I'm glad EA got the balls to remake their game from the ground up. And I'll get more into the concept of how I feel remakes should go. But not to beat a dead horse here. But Callisto should have absolutely, I think, been taken on its own merit. I mean, I saw too many people online whining and bitching and complaining and making big fucking showy videos how they shut it off and went for a refund. And I went, okay, I haven't played this game, so that's your opinion. Sure, you know, so it's like, again, it's like the dude, that's just your opinion, man. But now that I'm actually playing it, I'm like, wow, you people fucking got it wrong.
Yeah.
You got it so wrong. And turned around and what? You know, I don't know what else, what the competing factor was here at this point.
I mean, it's one thing, because the one thing that I heard about it on just like a technical side is that it was kind of buggy on, I think the PS5 was the most buggy port of the game.
Which is what I'm playing it on.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure it's fixed by now, right? It has to be.
Oh, yeah. No. It's running smooth as butter. There's no fucking issue at all, or at least none that I've encountered. And if it's been something, it's been minor. Physics engine fuck ups, as we see so often in these games where like a corpse is now jittery. I'm sitting there going, huh, I'll poke that a couple times just to make sure. Nope. Physics is fucking up. Okay, cool. But the only thing, and a buddy of mine is also playing at the same time. The only thing we have a little bit of question on is, there's no save area where like you go up a portal and say, oh, I'm going to make a hard save. Everything is an auto save. And sometimes the checkpointing can be a little distant between ports, especially if there's a, I mean, you're playing this by yourself with limited ammo and a stun baton as your main weapon. If I get into a room where there's like four or five enemies, now I'm really having to think, okay, I got to sneak. I got to use the environment. I have a thing very much like in Dead Space that you put on your arm that gives you, you know, telekinetic powers. I can pick enemies up and hurl them into the environment. How do I use environmental kills to reduce the numbers until I can go just beat the last one into a pulp? If you fuck that up and die, well, you could be put back a bit on the checkpoint. But I personally am not bothered by that. I've been through so many games over the years that have had gulfs of time. You can lose an entire hour in between a checkpoint, die, and suddenly find yourself your progress is in the shitter. Sorry, I've lived through this. I'm not bothered by that overall. So for me, I'm having a grand time. I'm having a shitload of fun. And I'm literally at a loss of going, looking back at the critical firestorm that came around this game and going, I am at a loss. I'm at a loss as to what the problem was. And I think you might be right. I think expectation by the developer because of what they did. And people tend to forget Dead Space was absolutely shit on when it first came out. It was backward. It was too derivative. It was this, it was that, it's the other thing. Now, you know, 20 years later, almost, people are like, oh, it's one of the greatest games of its generation. I went, yeah, to all of you while we're sitting here. I think you might be a little off. The biggest complaint about the original game I have is the non-voiced protagonist yes. in a horror game. And I mean, again, I realized why they were getting into it. You know, you want to have as much player insert as possible. But when you turn around, your only two allies in the game are going, Isaac, go here, fix this thing. Isaac, go do here, this thing. You're plot dumping about as hard as you can get at that point. And when, and somehow against all fuck reason, we get the second game of the series, Isaac suddenly busts out and goes, I hate everything and this is insane. I have to get out of here alive. And player base went, he talks now. Why does he talk? Why does man speak in middle of screaming monster game? And you look across like the vast gulf of the American consumer base and you're sitting there going, holy shit. It explains everything now. It explains election cycles. It explains why we have, you know, the things that show up in convenience stores. Do I need like nacho bursts, set your ass on fire Cheetos? No, but consumers like you wanted it. And we bought it because you're complaining about why man's talking scary game, you know, holy God. And again, I could rant on this stuff for hours.
I know you can. But yeah. this is why I have you on, man.
You're here to listen to a middle-aged man scream at nothing. That is why we're here.
But we should rant about another game that perhaps should have a little more voice acting, or maybe none whatsoever.
Yeah.
This is a little bit that we do have. Today, we will be talking about Nightmare Creatures. Kick this thing off with our personal history, and I'm gonna go first because I think you're gonna have a lot to say here. I have no personal history with Nightmare Creatures. For the Ghoulcade this year, I just don't have any Sega Genesis games that I could like contort and be like, hey, this is kind of a scary game. Like, I've got nothing. There's no way I can twist Sonic Spinball and be like, hey, this game is, besides the way it plays, it's scary.
Scary how much time I had to spend right on it.
So, you know, this year I've just randomly picked a bunch of scary games from the horror genre, 20 years or older to cover. 20 years or older, actually. I'm going to be playing Amnesia for the show. So, I mean, technically that's a retro game.
Yeah. I think, what is it, I know among classic cars, it's anything older than 25 years. I don't know where in games we stand. In internet terms, anything longer than yesterday yes. apparently is retro.
Man, I saw that last week. Who cares? Basically, my history with it is that I don't have any history. I just needed something to fill the schedule. So you have a personal history with nightmare creatures because you covered this on your show quite a while ago. So
I think it's about over a year ago now. Because it was my PS1 era came up faster than I thought. But yeah, anyway, my history with nightmare creatures. This one I did actually get. I think what I initially did is back in the PS1 days. So around the time of, you know, some of the greatest releases of the PS2, like, you know, Resident Evil 2, Castlevania Symphony of the Night, stuff like this. Activision snuck in Nightmare Creatures, which is... it's a horror title. It's not survival horror because you're not unlimited ammunition. It's more of an arcadey action horror title. The first thing I did, I think I rented it out of a Blockbuster because it's fuck. Of course we did because we all couldn't help but rent things out of a Blockbuster back then. But it stuck with me enough that I said, no, maybe I want to add this to my collection. And I did. And it is about as PS1 ass, I think, as you can get. I mean, in some cases, you can literally just count the polygons on the screen. Oftentimes in the enemies, as you're sitting there going, what the fuck is this thing? It looks like it's big, it's gray. Is this the Hulk? Is this a ogre, a troll? What have I got here? And things are coming at me that are just masses of polygons and tentacles, and I'm sitting there going, I guess I got to hit it, so I'm hitting it. And I'm not even sure what the fuck I'm looking at sometimes. Now, did it have surprises? Did it have startles? Absolutely. Are there a couple good models in there? Yes, the zombies don't look too bad, especially considering they're slightly more generic Resident Evil zombies. A couple of the werewolf models didn't do too bad. Some of the river beasts are kind of okay. But after a while, it gets like, I guess it's just like I'm hitting a sack of digital meat that's trying to eat me alive. So here we go. And I thought at the end of the day, it wasn't bad as far as games go. It did well enough that Activision let a sequel go through, which is a whole other kettle of fish. And I will try to avoid not conflating the two or talking about that one because the sequel is just, oh boy. Yeah, we got problems there. But I actually thought it was a pretty decent game, enough that I felt that it required me talking about it on my show and giving it kind of, as you would say at the time, a light recommend.
What? So, you know, when you picked it up, were you already playing a ton of other of the, like, what was considered survival horror games of the time?
Yeah, I mean, obviously outside of the Resident Evil series, which is the reason I actually picked up a PlayStation is because Resident Evil 1 interested me enough that I said, OK, I'll drop the money and buy the system just to play this game. And if I, you know, I was younger then, I was a little bit more careless with my money. And if I was at the end of the day going, if I screwed this up, then I have only myself to blame. But it turned out it was pretty good. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed Resident Evil 2 a lot. RE3 was okay, and I've voiced my opinion on that game before. It turns out the PS1 had a lot of decent survival horror titles. As I've said before, I wasn't a kid that was enjoyed horror movies like in the 80s. I knew about Freddy Krueger, Jason, Michael Myers, all that stuff. They did scare the piss out of me. I was raised in a stable household, and we weren't horror people. But, you know, monster movies, however, my brain was able to separate that out. And I was going, you know, I'm not into these slasher killers, but zombie movies, werewolf movies, vampire movies, that is okay. Because I feel like I can do something about that. There's years of lore behind these. I know how to deal with these creatures. There's ways to stop this. And when I would see survival horror games that sort of revolved around that, or action horror games or role-playing horror games that revolved around this, I went, okay, this is fun. I know what I'm doing. Even the other PS1 games where you were essentially technically the villain, such as, again, Castlevania Symphony of the Night, which is you are technically playing a half vampire going after your even more stronger father. Blood Omen, The Legacy of Cain, in which you are a nobleman who gets turned into a vampire and has to go across this fantasy land, slaying this massive conspiracy until you finish the job, essentially. I think one of the original clock towers got ported over at some point, and that was an interesting time because I still think the Scissor Man is one of the most underused, smartest, and scariest villains of the old times of horror, simply because of how you had to deal with him.
Yeah, I don't want to give away my thoughts there. Since that's going to be the very next episode. But yeah, it's very ahead of its
exactly.
time.
Exactly. And tower. Among many of the others, as well as, you know, the PS1 was still, there's still the days of like the platformers and the colorful mascot platformers. A lot of the early action shooters. Again, the PS1, I felt much like the SNES was kind of the Wild West. You're really just kind of throwing stuff out there by the game companies, seeing what we get. A lot of it ended up in the shit pile. Some of it actually stayed with it and was pretty good. And I feel by the PS2, things started to get more codified.
Yeah, the reason why I asked is because around the release of this game, at least from my memory, there wasn't a lot of horror games that were this action focused. Like, you brought up Resident Evil 2, and yeah, that's a lot more aliens than there. Yeah, it's a lot more aliens to Resident Evil's Alien, but like not like this, where Nightmare Creatures, as we talk about, is almost damn near a fucking fighting video game.
And that, it's holy shit. I got to bring another one out of the pile since you mentioned this. Again, as any of my listeners have known, and Keith, you know this, I talk a lot about licensed tabletop video games, particularly anything related to, you know, Dungeons and Dragons, Vampire the Masquerade, Warhammer, stuff like that. Another one that, since you said it, this game actually plays a lot like, speaking of action horror fighting game, is a game I have still have a problem with to this day, but it's Ravenloft, Iron and Blood, Warriors of Ravenloft. And good luck finding a copy of this one anymore, because I think, because it was Take-Two Interactive, it's one of their first out-of-the-box games. And with the sales at the time, it can be argued that if it weren't for Iron and Blood, Warriors of Ravenloft, we would not have the GTA series, because essentially that money went into building GTA, but that is a, it is a literal fighting game. It is a Tekken. It is a Samurai Showdown. It is a Street Fighter 2, but with goblins versus like paladins and wizards and werewolves and all that stuff. And that is literally a fighting game with horror elements. It predates Darkstalkers by maybe about half a year or so. In a lot of cases, I can see the template of Warriors of Ravenloft sitting on Nightmare Creatures, except Nightmare Creatures more sets you into a polygonal London and says, go for it.
Yeah, it's a lot more like the setting for Nightmare Creatures, as far as story and lore goes, they're attempting to set it in our time. They're trying to kind of rewrite history a little bit, or take the history that is there and kind of make it their own thing. It, whereas a lot of the games at the time that could have been instrumental in creating something like this, or having a lineage that crosses into Nightmare Creatures, is a lot more, has a more of a fantasy setting.
A lot of things around this time were either created whole cloth out of fresh ideas, or were games that you could see have roots in the real world only because they're, you know, a World War II simulator or some kind of other simulation title. This is, Nightmare Creatures falls most definitely into one of the alternative history tropes as a stand. I hate to use the word trope, but it's really what it is. It's a trope.
So we already you already talked about it. Actually, you brought it up, and this was something I was going to bring up as well. Nightmare Creatures is defined as a survival horror game, and I'm totally going to agree with you that it's really not. It's more of like an action horror game. I think the only thing that could define this as survival horror is in the literal sense that you are surviving the fucking adrenaline meter in this game, which
we'll get to that.
We'll get to. Then, I could be like, all right, I'll I'll give it a pass. But I think for all intents and purposes, it'd be easier to call this an action horror game than anything else. And it was developed by Callisto Entertainment and published by Activision in the United States and Sony Interactive Entertainment everywhere else. As far as Callisto Entertainment goes, I guess the company was founded by Nicholas. I'm going to fuck his name up. Nicholas Gaum, or it could be Nicholas Game. But he was 19 years old when he founded the company, which is, I mean, I know we might talk a lot of shit about this game coming up here in the next hour or so, but the dude was, like a brainchild.
I mean,
you know? he was incredibly smart.
Yeah, I mean, again, we also give young people a lot of shit these days because, well, I'm at that age where I keep looking at people in their early, you know, late teens, early 20s and going, oh, God, you have no idea what's fucking coming. Sorry, kids. I guess the same way a lot of our parents did. But, you know, a lot of people at that age are still, quote unquote, finding themselves. To get somebody out the gate who's like, nope, I know what I want to do and I'm not even old enough to drink and I'm founding a business as here we go, is really, it says something a lot about his drive, his character, his desire to stand out from the crowd.
Yeah. And I mean, the dude was, knew what he was doing because he was getting a ton of investors. The company went through a couple different name changes before it was settled on Callisto Entertainment, but throughout their history, Apple was investing in Callisto. They had Bill Gates invest in Callisto. They had a number of different celebrities putting money into the company. And towards the end of the 90s, I mean, I'm sure you remember the dot-com bubble.
Mm-hmm.
For the kids listening to this, if you don't remember the dot-com bubble, it was basically when people realized that you can make money on the internet for the very first time. And so everybody wanted to make money on the internet. And for every eBay or Amazon website that was out there, there were like 50 other incredibly shady websites that were selling way more expensive products than there ever needed to be. And so the government really kind of started to crack down on these. And Callisto Entertainment was kind of shuffled into all of that shit just because of how many people were investing into Callisto Entertainment. And I think 2002, I believe, they filed for bankruptcy. And that kind of triggered the government to be like, we should take these guys to court and find out exactly what's going on. Why all of a sudden they are starting to lose money. Long story short, the entire company was acquitted of any wrongdoing and basically shut down after that. But as far as Nicholas Game, he's still around, still making games. But this was Nightmare Creatures was pretty much the game that put them on the map.
Oh, absolutely. And which is a question because I actually don't know between essentially I'm assuming Activision or could be Sony. I don't actually know who owns the rights currently to this property.
That's interesting. Yeah, I don't know.
So I've pondered the concept of, yeah, I mean, Activision has a lot of property rights that, much like a lot of the big companies, they're going to sit on for the end of time. We ain't ever going to see this come back. As much as I thought about the concept of remake with this title, but we'll get into that. But I was thinking of this last night. I went, who the hell actually owns the rights to this thing? Because there are two games. There was a mobile game, which was apparently a really early mobile phone game. And there was a planned third game in the series that got canceled in 2004. So somebody has all this sitting in a lockbox somewhere. I was just curious, you know, who that might be. But I think Activision is probably the most likely culprit.
Well, the game had two publishers, right? I mean, it was Activision here and then SIE around the world. So I wonder how that is split up. And I wonder if Sony's like, no, we want to put something out. And Activision's like, we want to put this out. So I wonder if there's maybe like a little bit of a push and pull.
Yeah.
If there is any at all.
Yeah. That's kind of even with, you know, putting it out on a digital marketplace like a Steam or something like that. You have to figure out, well, who are we going to split the royalty rights to? How much does each go? Where do we go to? Activision Blizzard, as we know, is a greedy little shitbag company to begin with. And SCI, you know, it's Sony. They don't have to play nice. They've got a ton of market share, and they can revive or kill anything they want. And for the console war people out there, keep in mind Nintendo's doing its own thing, so they're out of this entirely. And Microsoft only created the Xbox to screw with Sony. It is not going to hurt Microsoft at all if things go bad or they go or they go well.
I was going to say, this almost seems like a game that would have been perfect back in the day for the Xbox 360 arcade marketplace.
I agree with you. It would have been. Unfortunately, it never got brought over. Again, I think it's mainly because of rights issues. Sure. Again, the split, who would have had it? How are we going to split this money up? Or something like if Microsoft wanted to invest, you know, early on and say, hey, you know, we got this Xbox 360 platform. You got a third sequel sitting there that's gathering dust. Why don't we just polish that up, set it out the door, and we'll put it out on the system and see how it runs. I mean, it's not that they haven't done that before. Look at Golden Axe. They had a couple of, you know, mothballed sequels that were, Microsoft said, hey, here's some money. Just finish them up, put them out, and see what we get.
They did that with GoldenEye recently. Put a little bit of polish on it and just throw it on Game Pass.
Yeah, throw it on Game Pass. I mean, if people are going to pick it up, it doesn't matter because we're going to get dividends anyway. You've already gotten paid off subscriptions, so what's the harm?
Nightmare Creatures was released in North America on September 30th, 1997, and in Europe in January 1998. Since its release, and I was going to ask you this earlier, it has been ported to the Nintendo 64, PC, and mobile, and was followed up with a sequel, Nightmare Creatures 2, in the year of our Lord 2000. Did you check out the N64 port of this by any chance?
You know, I did not, because I think by the time it came out, I don't remember if I had my N64 anymore. Like I said, I did have an N64 at the same time as a PS1, and my grouping of games for that was very limited. I got that one for Ocarina of Time and Castlevania 64, and I think Castlevania 64, like Legacy of Darkness, those end up being the only three games I had for it. And by the end, I'm like, I'm not really a Mario guy, so I didn't play Mario 64. And there was a lot of other games that came out that I'm like, not really gathering my attention. So eventually I think I sold the N64 before I was able to play the Nightmare Creatures port.
Interestingly
enough.
Or
the Resident Evil 2 port.
Oh, which is like, for the time, incredible that they were even able to fucking port that game to the N64.
To a cartridge from a CD, yeah.
Yeah, that is a miracle of technology there. So the reason why I brought up the N64 port, well, not only because I had to, but also I found out that in that version, you can turn off the adrenaline meter.
Yes.
It's
yeah, that is
horseshit.
You can still have all the hard aspects of the game. You just don't have that additional timer on top of it.
Yeah. And review scores. And, oh, go ahead.
No. Yeah, continue. We'll talk about the adrenaline meter because that has to be
talked
about.
Review scores for context. GameSpot gave it a 5 out of 10. EGM gave it a very specific 6.625 out of 10. IGN, 7.8 out of 10. And something you brought up, and I actually had in my notes, something that was brought up outside of the podcast here, was Entertainment Weekly rears its ugly head again. For some reason, they were reviewing video games in the 90s. They gave it a B-, and they stated, quote, Castlevania : Symphony of the Night is flat and dated by comparison, end quote. Has there
that
been a quote that's ever been
fucking take? Yeah. That is a fucking take. I don't know. No, I looked at that quote because I saw it last night before and I sent it to you and I'm like, are you fucking serious? Are you fucking serious? The pedigree that Castlevania has, the sales that Symphony of the Night eventually did, completely outclassed Nightmare Creatures for as much as I enjoyed the game. And it is the game that solidified the other half of the Metroidvania. As we know, the other Castlevanias were platformer action games until Igarashi. I think, if yes. I get the wrong guy. Yeah, Igarashi got a hold of it and transformed it into such a different thing that the next several Castlevania games would all be these search action titles that people have fond memories of. And here, Entertainment fucking Weekly, you know, the same people that, you know, want to know what's going on in Johnny Depp's asshole this week, you know, are reviewing video games.
I mean, even to define the genre as Metroidvania, fans have also classified that era of Castlevania as Igavanias because of Igarashi, because it was, he had such an influential style with those games that
absolutely.
The ones that he didn't touch were obviously very different. And just to be so fucking short-sighted, I mean, again, this was, I talked about this, I think, on my RD Lightfoot episode, where a lot of outlets, gaming outlets, and apparently Entertainment Weekly, were just so sick of like 2D gaming that like anything 3D was just going to get praised just for being 3D. And I mean, you already talked about it, dude. Like, Nightmare Creatures is a polygon ass polygon video game, and I haven't played Symphony of the Night, so I won't talk about like how that game plays or anything. I'm sure it plays just fine, but
yeah,
even
still,
just
they've
visually,
released it so many times.
Yeah, even just looking at it visually, though, I don't know what, I mean, yes, Castlevania is certainly flat, but, like, it looks fucking gorgeous compared to Nightmare Creatures.
Yeah, I mean, even the artistic vision alone, it just outpaces a lot of things, which is, I think, one of the things that made it stand out in the polygon era, because, of course, every game wanted to suddenly go, oh, we have a third dimension we've just opened up because of the technology. Let's utilize it. Some of them did very well. Most of them are trash. And I've said before, I have nothing against trash. I have trash taste. I know that. A lot of the media I consume is not considered always the best and the brightest of the bunch. Yes, I'm more than happy to, like, you know, witness the darlings of any genre, but at the end of the day, I'm largely a simple man. I have simple pleasures. I know what I like. But even I can sit there and go, what a fucking shit ass take is this? No, it is the two don't match. And again, this is why I don't, the professional critics, and obviously what we're doing here in talking about this, we are taking on the role of critic. We are criticizing, we are critiquing for a reason. But people who get paid on a routine basis, and I'm not jealous. As much as I'd love the money to get paid to write professionally, that ain't going to happen. Realistically, that ain't going to happen. I know that. But a lot of professional writers and critics, I sit there and I look at their takes and I'm like, What is this? What are you thinking? Are you trying to tick a box? Are you trying to piss people off on purpose? Because if you are, you're not, you're stupid. That's a bad way to go about it. Are you bootlicking the entire thing? Obviously you're not. What are we doing?
That's just the thing. They're getting a paycheck, right? They probably play one of these games a month, put it out in Entertainment Weekly or whatever. And
yeah.
They're like, all right, that's the video game that we played this month. Whereas, like, we're doing this as a hobby that we genuinely love. We have a ton of experience. The early days of the gaming industry to now, we're still playing. I mean, you just talked about playing Dredge, playing brand new games still, you know, with the context of where the genre even started to where it has evolved to what it's become.
Mm, exactly.
And a lot of these people writing for outlets and magazines today, not to like sound like a fucking ageist or anything like that, but they're like, you know, they're fresh out of college. You know, they got their journalism degree, assuming they got their journalism degree, and they
you don't necessarily
probably
have, to.
Have touched a video game, and they're like, I could probably write about this.
No. And, you know, the other side of it, a lot of the professional critic, the major game outlets, your Polygons, your IGN, stuff like that, they have about a week to try and complete a game prior to release to come up with a review, and then they go to the bar on Friday, come home with a hangover on Sunday, and start the whole cycle again Monday. And they're in a lot of cases not doing any better, because a lot of it is bootlicking, but they're also setting an expectation for the consumer saying, look, if this does not hit nines and tens, then it is the worst thing that has ever befallen the history of humanity, despite war, plague, calamity, meteors falling out of the fucking sky. You know, somebody giving, say, Starfield a 7.5, they need to be pilloried immediately.
Yeah.
Fuck off. I mean, you're contributing to the problem.
It always goes back to my favorite saying, it's okay to like a video game. Mm-hmm. And speaking of liking a video game, the last review here, before we get into the retro recollections portion, is from Matilda1378 on Google, who gave this game a 5 out of 5 perfect score, saying, quote, I want Nightmare Creatures as remake. Is Nightmare Creatures 3 is Alexander Crowley, is younger brother is Adam Crowley, but also he is samurai bounty hunter. End quote.
Okay. I recognize a bunch of those words, not necessarily in their formation or unification in English, but I recognize several of them. So we're going to run with that. Sure, samurai. Kid. Samurai Crowley, which I think already did come out in Japan. Who knows? I don't fucking know. Jesus Christ.
Google's got them all, man.
Oh, yeah, no.
Let's slide into the retro recollections part of the show, which is a portion of the show where you guys get to talk about the game in question and share your experiences. And if this is something that you want to take part in, just look for the shout out on social media. I'll post when I'm talking about a game and just basically go from there. It's that simple. You write to me and I read it. And first, we're going to get to two of our patrons wrote in, and the first is coming from Chris Copleen, and he says, I remember being interested in this game when it came out. While I didn't make it very far, I remember it being fun. Then I watched Shane, his co-host, Retro Hangover, shout out Shane. I watched Shane play it on a stream one night, and I think I'll keep my memories over revisiting it. So just okay. A little bit of, I guess, kind of what we do on this show, where it's...
Yeah.
Sometimes the past is best left in the past.
In the past.
Next is from Ryan Player One. He says, the first time I played Nightmare Creatures, I was visiting family and we had rented a PlayStation along with this game. Man, I remember renting consoles back in the day. What a fucking mm-hmm. waste of time.
Oh, God. Waste of fucking money, time.
So expensive. You may as well have just bought
my adventure
console
with the Dreamcast. Yeah, exactly. I should have just bought it.
I remember my cousin and I didn't make it very far, but I was heavily into Resident Evil at the time, so the game resonated with me, but my family was more into the other game we rented, Madden.
The fuck me. Oof. Sideways. Of course, you know, John Madden.
The plot twist.
His fucking greasy-ass cheeseburger heart attack fist rises up from the grave to claim another. Thanks.
I mean, I don't... They had to have been decent. Right?
I guess,
was Madden ever good? Here's my question.
I don't know. I think I tried my hand at one of them once. I remember Temco Bowl way more, being a lot more popular. And then I think
NFL
just,
Quarterback Club?
Yeah, I think they just faded out. And eventually, I think Madden was the only survivor left standing on the field. So everyone went, oh, this must be the winner, I guess. You know. Then, of course, the joke of the Madden curse, that whoever's on the game cover that year is, like, bound to break their leg or get caught with, you know, three hookers and a, you know, video camera or something like that's going to ruin their career. So
Electronic Arts, the eater of worlds and the eater of the football industry.
Yeah, literally American football and football worldwide, because they also had the FIFA franchise. So you're more right than you know.
And the last one we have here is from the Dog-Faced Gamer. This comes off of, I think it was on Blue Sky. Nightmare Creatures is a series that is very much due a reboot. Loved the game when it first came out. Had to play the PS1 version, though, because the N64 and PC ports were not nearly as good. It had that Bloodborne aesthetic long before Bloodborne.
Mm-hmm. Which is something I've said myself, so I can't say anything different about that. Side note, though, is it just me? There's a reason I don't have an account on Blue Sky Social, because every time I see the shortened form, my brain wants to say Banksy Social. And I'm like, Banksy, the gorilla graffiti artist who stood against corporations? Well, now I just can't be on this because, sorry, that's just how my brain runs.
I just got a podcast to promote, so I really just don't give a shit. It's just copy and paste everything I have into all of these text boxes.
Yeah, I know. It's that same thing. I just, just put it out there. And at this point, like, if anyone, hopefully people listen, but if they don't, I'm like, I tried. I couldn't defeat the algorithm.
Every new social media platform that pops up, if I can get into it and infect everybody's brains, become my own nightmare creature.
There you go.
I will.
And pop up these social media companies do. It's, mushrooms in the cow pie after the rain.
Yeah, thank you guys for writing in. And again, if you want to take part in the Retro Recollections portion of the show, just keep an eye out on those social media, all of those social media platforms that I'm on. So if you're following me there, you should see them pop up every once in a while. Let's go into the story and plot. And you were kind of getting into it earlier. I'm going to let you take the reins because as far as I know, this guy, Adam Crowley, accidentally made nightmare creatures. And he was like, he was trying to perfect like the human genome or some shit. And all of these things turned into the titular nightmare creatures. And he was like, close enough. And it was like, I'm going to take over the world.
Yep. All right. So this is where Phil gets into his, teacher hat bullshit and puts on the talk. So
yeah, you just put on your coat with like the elbow patches.
Yeah, exactly. I get to the houndstooth. I have my tweed. It's all wonderful. Yes. I put on the little hat. Yes. So
you got your pipe.
I got my pipe. So technically, yes, I'm chewing on it now, as you can tell. Technically, where does Nightmare Creatures begin? It begins with a division of occultists known as the Order of Hecate. Hecate, as far as my research can tell, is a real goddess. She was a Greek goddess. She was the Greek goddess of many things. Ghosts, the moonlight, witchcraft, and protection therefrom. Hearth, family, dogs, several things. She did have a cult back in ancient Greek times, and there's some belief that she actually may have been ported over from the Egyptian pantheon at some point, where she was like Hecate or something like that, but it became codified in Greek as Hecate, and her cult kind of burned out. She's not really a big part of the well-known Greek pantheon. Well, supposedly in the lore of the game, there is a, like a Masonic order kind of called themselves the Brotherhood of Hecate, who believes in, as many things they do, their superiorness of their own wealth and their own self-importance, and are trying to rewrite the human genome in the 1600s so they can essentially be supermen. They can be the Übermensch. They can be the pinnacle of humanity and therefore go on to rule. Well, one of their members, a real-life minor head of state, and I'm going to get his name wrong. I think it's Samuel Pepto-Bismol, whatever the fuck his name. The English know this way better than I do. Supposedly defected. He was a member of it and was like, okay, I'm cool with this, right until they started realizing that, oh, this is not turning us into the supermen. We're, like, getting extra arms and eyeballs and tentacles, and this is not where I want to go. And supposedly, he sets fire to the Brotherhood headquarters in 1666, which then creates the first Great London Fire. Now, in the real world, we know the Great London Fire because this same individual was just a historian. He just recorded a lot of stuff the night London was on fire. And he went to the prime minister that night and suggested that as a firebreak, that we start evacuating both the rich and the poor and just start pulling down houses as a fire break, which ultimately didn't work. But he got to have like a really nice night where he journaled. He watched London burn. He went on to have a wonderful dinner. And then in the middle of the night, had all of this shit pulled out of his house and put in a secondary house so it wouldn't burn. And somehow his stuff was spared. But he's a good hook for the game. Well, supposedly, two centuries go on. We're now in 1834. And it looks like something is going on in the background by this Adam Crowley, maybe a doctor, physician, scientist, and occultist, is trying to restart the Brotherhood. He's got his own little Hecate group, and he's turning out monsters. He doesn't want them to be Superman. He wants this army of undead monstrosities to go forth and destroy London. Somebody, we don't know who, from the new Brotherhood defects and takes this to London's preeminent research occultist and priest, which is hilarious because at this point, it would not be a priest in the same thing we know of. It would be a essentially an Anglican head of church, so like a minister more than anything else. But are for the first of our two playable characters, Ignatius. So he drops off the book, this book, into Ignatius's mailbox with a note saying, investigate the Brotherhood location, you'll learn some stuff. It turns out it's Samuel Pepys's, if I'm pronouncing it right, lost journal from that night. Everything he recorded from the first attempt at making nightmare creatures. So now, Ignatius calls on the only other person he knows who can help him, who happens to be a doctor living in New Orleans. The doctor immediately gets on a ship and powers ahead to London and brings his daughter, Nadia, the second of our two playable characters, with him. Unfortunately, the doctor is intercepted. He's murdered. And now Nadia, who has lived in New Orleans as an American citizen her whole life, is stuck in London by herself. And her only other point of contact is Ignatius. Ignatius wants his friend revenged. Nadia wants her father revenged. And they both want to find out what the hell's going on with this Adam Crowley. Adam Crowley being our stand-in for the late Victorian era Aleister Crowley, a real historic figure who was himself a claimed scientist, occultist, the whole deal. The reality is Aleister Crowley probably would not have been very much. It's just that he started the Order of the Golden Dawn and a lot of other Masonic occult groups he was a part of. And I say Masonic as general terms. They're not all Masons. They had, what was he a part of? Not the, what the hell did they call him? The Hellfire Club. He was a part of that at some point and everything like that. The biggest thing was, is that Crowley, in the real world Crowley, was openly bisexual in the late 1800s. And he was a minor lord. So while he can get away with it, essentially what he was doing was still committing crimes against morality. So he just leaned into it. He said, well, fuck it. If I can't get be openly bisexual and love who I want, then I'm going to go full fucking into this. I'm going to go against the church. I'm going to go against the state. I'm going to be an anarchist. I'm going to be a Satanist. I'm going to be a lot of different things to piss people off. So there was a course of this wide history built around Crowley. So we get Adam Crowley, a doctor, a physician, back in the days when you didn't really need a whole lot to be a doctor or a scientist other than declaring yourself one and saying, I will cut open the dead and examine you for pustules. That's about all you needed. And we get this maniac as our antagonist for the game. But that's kind of really the, like the background setup. And it just so happens that he pulls this shit on the night of what historically will now be the second Great Fire of London in 1834, except instead of how it happened in the real world, it's because Crowley set Westminster Abbey on fire during his final confrontation with our heroes, and London burned for a second time.
Yeah, so none of that is in the video game. That is all...
that is all research. That is, you have to go digging for that.
I couldn't
have
said it better. I tried looking up the manual for this game, and it was incredibly hard to find. And the copy that I did find was like the worst fucking photocopy I've ever seen of anything. And I think it said, now this is something that you clarified, but I thought it said in the manual that Ignatius and Nadia are scientists. And I'm like, Man, these scientists, they just knew how to be fucking ninjas because that's what we are, ninja scientists.
Yep. No, Nadia's a fencer, which makes no sense even for the time period because, no, by that point, it's 1834. We know what firearms are. Most armies are full musket at that point. They only had weapons on them when they ran out of bullets so they could charge up and stab the other guy. Professional court fencers on the level with which she is fighting throughout that game, she's an Olympian level fencer. Ripping these things apart ain't happening.
Yeah, she's pulling off moves in this game that I have never seen a fencer do.
Mm-hmm. And Ignatius himself is running through the streets with a staff. He is not a man of peace. He's not taken a vow of peace. He is beating the piss out of everything. And he literally looks like he just walked out of a Shaolin temple yesterday. I mean,
there are bits of story. We are fed bits of story in between the levels. Because as you are nearing the end of every stage, you're always reminded that you are constantly just... We're just pursuing Crowley throughout the entire game. You know, he's always just evading us through every stage. And you
will see him through every stage.
I was going to bring that up in graphics, but we can talk about it now. But before we get to that, I mean, I just wanted to say that between stages that there is a little bit of voice dialogue where I believe it's Crowley and just kind of talking about what's going on. My only thing is that because I was just impatient, I wanted to get to the next stage. I just... always almost accidentally skip the dialogue.
Well, so that's not necessarily your fault. There's a problem with the dialogue on the PC port. In a lot of cases, the PC port dialogue will cut off halfway through. This is not a problem on the PS1.
Well, that's what I was playing on the PlayStation, and they have like a results screen or something and be like, oh, you've killed this many enemies or whatever. And I think just naturally I would just hit X and the dialogue doesn't pop up right away. It takes a minute. And then sometimes I'll be hitting X and then all of a sudden I'll get like the first line of dialogue and then the screen will skip ahead to the next stage. And I'm like, fuck. And I would always forget. So it's just kind of sucks.
Yeah, that's a weird programming thing that they would essentially tie the next interface to get through the results screen, I think was tied to like the X button or the cross button, depending on who this is. You know, goddamn heathens can't tell X from cross. Fucking same to me. But if you hit it too fast, it cuts off the dialogue and opens up the next stage. But Crowley's dialogue, you're right. That's who's talking. That is entirely Crowley. And his dialogue throughout the game is weird. Because he starts off with mustache-twirling villainy going, ha-ha-ha, I'm going to be superior. I'm going to just crush you and destroy London. Then about halfway through the game, it's almost like he started to admire characters for as much bullshit as he's putting them through, and they're going, they keep surviving, they keep going on. He's almost mystified that they want to survive in the face of this and don't understand why they wouldn't just lay down their weapons and be overtaken by this horde of monstrosities. Till the end of the game where he's back to his, oh, time's running out, you're about to catch me, die, die, die. You know, again, like really Saturday morning cartoon villain level bullshit here. But again, it was the late 90s. We can't look at it as we do through the lens of now and say, well, this is shit and this was terrible and this is why they didn't do this. This is no, because it was video games. It was a third string player in the media department. We already had movies and books and television and music and whatnot. We weren't getting this great dialogue that we are today. We weren't getting these, you know, masterclass writers creating dialogue and scenarios like we do today. Like you can trip over any 10 games and get passably decent, realistic dialogue unless somebody shits the bed entirely. In 97, this was not the case.
Obviously, voice acting had been around for a while. In other mediums, too, especially, I mean, you look at cartoons and stuff, but like as far as gaming goes, I mean, there had been voice acting prior to this, but this was like really when game developers were really trying to involve voice actors into their games, put them in there and have some sort of actual dialogue instead of just reading text all the time. And
yeah, exactly.
You know, for the bits that I did encounter, like you said, it's fucking corny, but for the time, there wasn't really anything like this at that point. I mean, it's hell of a lot better than what we got in Resident Evil. You know, those voice actors, they To be fair, they had no context for what they were even working on.
No,
so. But
no, I mean, like, God love them. They really went for it, and they tried very, very hard. And not all of it is awful. It's just they also had nobody in the booth going, can we take a second take on that one? Because that didn't come out well at all.
Yeah, because the Japanese developers were probably like, yeah, I know, it sounds good to us.
Like, it's English. We do good. Yeah, thumbs up from the booth. And like, you're like, holy shit. I can only imagine them. They're on a work visa in Japan, you know, doing their thing, and just have the sound booth guy go, aha, and thumbs up, and like barely in English at all, and going, sure, fine. I read the dialogue. When's the pay
right,
coming?
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
By comparison, you know, corny as it is, and I'm going to reference another game for this time period, again, Blood Omen, The Legacy of Kain. Simon Templeman is the one who plays Kain. And that man was theatrically trained, had, I think, London credits, his American credits as a voice, as an actor, voice actor, stage actor, and just the entirety of that voice work in the game is driven and hangs exactly on what that man says. And he puts his best Shakespearean oomph into that game, and it can come out corny. But you're sitting there going, get me the popcorn. I'm here for the fucking ride at this point. I will go through any level of bullshit just to hear this man snark and mutter and remind and talk and give just lines of string together bullshit in a fantasy horror setting that make it sound real and
who
there.
Who did you play as? And the next question, the follow-up question to that is, does it matter who you play as? Does it affect the story at all?
I think I played with Ignatius a little bit more, and here's the dumb reason why. This is going to make no goddamn sense, but I only played with him because he had a staff, and so did Donatello, my favorite Ninja Turtle. So that's literally why I picked Ignatius over Nadia. Technically, Nadia might actually be the faster of the two characters with more acrobatic maneuvers than Ignatius, but him is just because he had big stick hit enemy. I thought, oh, big stick, keep me a distance, hit enemy, do
right.
Well.
Yeah.
Which doesn't make sense because Nightmare Creatures has a dismemberment system. And how a man with a big stick is literally hacking off limbs, I don't know. But it's happening. And there we are.
So it doesn't have any like story relevance of who you pick. It doesn't change the ending.
No,
or anything.
No, and technically both characters are present in the quote-unquote cutscenes. And I mean, the cutscenes are the end of story or beginning of next chapter, you know, one-page little art scene you get where they're, like, laying over a body or they're trying to, you know, get information out of someone who's on the cusp of dying or they're, like, standing in a dark alley about to be jumped by 15 different goons. It doesn't really matter who you play.
I chose Nadia. If I have an option to play as a woman, I'm probably going to do it 90% of the time. Yeah, I was just curious because I definitely did not want to play the game. Well, I don't want to bury the lead too much, but I didn't want to play the game again as Ignatius. And I certainly, when I went to watch like a Let's Play, I certainly couldn't tell if there was any changes at all. And, you know, we mentioned seeing Crowley throughout the game. And there are times where it's like, it almost seems like he's always watching you. It always seems like he's in the background somewhere. And there are times when he is literally in the background. Like there's one of the dock levels where at the point in which you're in the level, he's like across from you, but you can't like actually get to him yet. And so he's just standing on the other side of the dock, which also kind of helps with the atmosphere of this game, which is kind of why I wanted to talk about this aspect in the graphics portion. But because of that render distance and just of how dark this game, literally how dark this game actually is, and just kind of seeing him stand there's kind of creepy. And sometimes he'll like peek around corners or you'll just see him running off someplace. I thought that was also kind of like a nice touch to kind of remind you of exactly what your goal is and what the story entails and stuff like that.
Absolutely. Because you can easily get lost in the levels. You can get lost in the, hey, I need to hurry up and kill this thing. Nightmare Creatures actually suffers the same render draw distance on the PS1 that Silent Hill, the first game, did. except instead of doing what Silent Hill did and having this pervasive fog everywhere, Nightmare Creatures just turned the palette way down and darkened up as much of the background to the point where you almost don't know where the hell you are until the pop-in occurs. You may be able to hear creatures in the distance. You maybe see, you know, the outline of their polygon as they're, you know, buzzing towards you as fast as possible. But sometimes, depending on where you are, you can get lost pretty quick, which is a problem I had, which is a problem a lot of people had, which was it's a fully realized 3D environment, but there's no signposts, there's no markers, there's no pop-up that says this way to more enemies, that you just get turned around. And there's also a lot of secrets in the levels that if you don't know to look for them, you're going to miss them. And that could lead you, that could make you miss items that you need to survive. I rewatched a Let's Play with both characters. I didn't talk about this in my original thing because I didn't know it at the time, but it turns out there's weapon upgrades that make your weapon stronger that I did not know were there until I watched the Let's Plays because they're hidden.
So
both characters get weapon upgrades.
Because it is so fucking easy to get lost in this game. Mm-hmm. And there were times I was roaming around the stages and I did find, I think maybe two or three of the upgrades. I don't know how many there are in total. Is there one every stage?
There's not one every stage. There's one every like 2 to 3 stages. I think you get a total of 3 or 4 weapon upgrades by the end. I know Ignatius, he's basically wielding a double-headed axe. A stick with 2 axe heads on either end. And Nadia, I think, is wielding some kind of thing that almost looks like a chainsaw by the end of the run.
So I definitely got 2 of them. And I think the third one, I think I saw it, but I didn't know how to get to it. But when I collected them, I wasn't even sure what the fuck they did until I did research for the game. And I'm like, oh, those were weapon upgrades? Like, I couldn't fucking tell.
Yep.
But I guess.
And here's where I start to, you know, the atmosphere of Nightmare Creatures is wonderful. It is extremely moody. It's very well done. The sound's good for its time. The monsters sound pretty good until you see them and you're like, oh, hey, chunky polygon blocks. Here we fucking go. The problem is sometimes the environment, the exploration, which is almost mandated. And don't worry, folks, we're getting to the adrenaline timer. We'll get there. But it's almost mandated that you explore the level to get extra goods, extra shit, the weapon upgrades on the stages that they happen. But sometimes they're hidden behind walls that don't look any different from any of the other textures. I mean, as gamers, we're trained to, there's cracks in the wall, throw a bomb there. Hey, that's discolored. Maybe let's try and break it and see if there's something going on. They really didn't do that with this game. Some of this stuff is hidden at the other end of a jump. And the jumps in this game
are incredibly fiddly.
If
there is something at the other end of the jump because of the rendering distance.
Until you fling yourself into oblivion. And there are stages in this, like the dock stages and several others, that have water. Your characters can't swim. It's auto death. Now, it's death for the enemies too, so you can push some enemies into the water and kill them out. But it's going to end up killing you more often than not. In a lot of cases, and here's where another complaint comes in, the sub-weapons that you get, that little array of shit that you may find when you break open things, the developers were never clear, and they never put it in the manual either, what all of them did. So you're going to have pockets full of stuff that you may not know what happens until you experiment. I mean, it's easy. You pull out a flintlock musket. It looks like a musket. Oh, shoot gun. Pulled it out. Okay, shot the enemy. Enemy shot. There's a 3-barrel one, which turns out is a screen-clearing thing. No matter who cares, if it's Nadia, she spins around while firing this. If it's Ignatius, he pulls one out, wipes half the screen, pulls another one out, wipes the other half of the screen. The little glowing things you get, those are your life refills. The hearts, that's what happens when you die. You automatically get revived. But as it turns out, that heart will also keep you going for a little while if you run out of adrenaline until you can find a new enemy. But there are also things that they don't explain. There are green flasks. I don't know what they do.
I still don't know what the hell they did. If it wasn't the gun, the life pickups, the hearts, or the ice spell that you get, because there's a couple spells you can pick up. I don't know what the fuck they did.
Yep.
Like I got a lightning spell and I don't know if it hurt anybody.
I don't know either. I fired it once. Was it a flashbang? I don't know what it did. You know, that little thing looks like a circular saw.
Yeah, what the fuck is that?
I found out watching the Let's Play. It's a damage multiplier. Once you fire it up, your damage goes through the roof for a little while.
Sure. I'll believe that.
I had no fucking clue.
You could have told me.
No, I had no fucking clue.
You could have told me it fucking pleasured somebody, and I'd have been like, yeah. That.
Yeah, I know. Shot confetti out of your asshole and yelled, Nadia dashed to the streets in a one piece. I had no fucking idea what this thing does. I found it watching the Let's Play. I watched somebody fire it up and just begin to chew through high-level enemies. I'm like, oh, it's a damage multiplier. That would have been useful. That knowledge would have been great had I known it out of the gate. There's mines and dynamite. Well, dynamite's easy. Light it and throw. Right. I know what dynamite does. But there's a thing that looks like a ball with spikes. That's a sea mine. Turns out it takes a few seconds to detonate. You mine the ground, you wait, you hoard enemies into the watch them
game
blow
that I just played.
Yeah, exactly. I watched them, and years later I'm looking at the retrospective going, this is why I didn't talk about it, because I didn't know it. I'm like, wait a minute, that's what it fucking did.
Yeah,
holy shit.
I mean, you want to talk about so that Bloodborne aesthetic. I mean, here it is, fucking verbatim. I mean, we are just copying Nightmare Creatures homework, right? Just don't describe anything. I mean, just let them figure it out.
Yeah. Even with Bloodborne, you could look in the item inventory and say, oh, here's a fun little paragraph that it might allude to what this is. And don't get me wrong, I love Bloodborne as a game. I'm not saying it doesn't have its problems. It absolutely did. But it obviously, at some point, the Japanese developers at FromSoft had to have found Nightmare Creatures and said, oh, hey, let's group a shitload of notes, because this is kind of what we're going for here. Almost down to the setting entirely.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But
we'll talk about that in the graphics.
You know, with Nightmare Creatures, this is, it would have been fantastic if I'd have known what a half of this stuff did. Also, as turns out, and you can find this accidentally, but there are literal fighting game combos.
Yeah.
You can actually do input combos to, like, dismember, cut enemies in half, do additional damage, do acrobatic shit, which they never go into.
So, you know, we talked about how this game is not a survival horror game, and we kind of agreed that it was more of an action horror. And the minute-to-minute gameplay is literally you just roaming around a 3D environment, and it plays basically like a beat-em-up.
Mm-hmm. It does. It plays like a horror beat-em-up. Night Slashers is the only other thing I can think of that did that.
Since you are kind of talking about the combat here, does it seem unbalanced to you? Because I feel like when I was playing it, I felt either I was way too powerful or the enemies were way too powerful. And as far as the enemies go, I mean, some of them just completely jump you out of nowhere because you can easily get stun locked, but you can also easily stun lock the enemies. So it's like fucking weird.
Yeah, no, there's no outright power balance. There's no sense of incrementally feeling as though you're gaining more power. But at the same time, you can get stun locked. You can stun lock the enemy. It is wildly unbalanced in that department. And unless you are a savant who managed to figure all this shit out and map it and can just keep the enemy in a stun lock state or pull out your sub weapons and litter the battlefield with bullets, bombs, and everything else, you're going to have a hard time. It doesn't help that the game is designated. It only has two default settings, easy, which is piss, but still has some issues, and its default of hard. There's no neutral ground. There's no normal.
I think I messaged you
will go
when
in,
I started the game, and I'm like, why is this defaulted to hard?
Because that's what they did. They stomped the piss out of you right away. And this is, again, everyone, and I know how much you hate to bring this up. I don't like to bring it up either. But people love to default and say, well, FromSoft titles at blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, no. This is verging more on Nintendo hard.
Yeah.
This is the unfair of the arcades hard.
I played it on easy and still had a very difficult time.
Oh, yeah. It's not going to be a cakewalk by comparison, but the hard mode setting is a punishment setting.
And I mean, you brought up the combos. I wasn't able to pull off any of these fucking combos. They would give me like a list of combos and I'm like, none of this is working. And if it is working, then there's no animations that really differentiate any of these combos.
Yeah.
Like I felt like I was just like the best thing for me to do offensively was just to mash square the entire time.
Oh, absolutely. You might as well be playing with the game with your ass cheeks by that point, because that's about as far as we're getting. I mean, most average fighting games by that point had a loop. Like, not just like Street Fighter or something, like your beat-em-up brawlers had a loop. You know, hit this button, hit a jump in there, get your combo going. You can at least move your fingers around, like the controller pad or the arcade stick, without much of an issue. And you get something that'll passably get you through the game. A 1-2-3 punch combo, some kind of grand uppercut, you know, some kind of high kick gets you through it. This one, I think they're trying to add those beat-em-up areas, but they didn't know how to program them. Didn't look at enough games to find out what the loop was. They only had to turn around. This game came out in 97. Final Fight came out in 89. Streets of Rage, Streets of Rage 1 and 2 came out in, I think, at about 90, 91, 92, progressively. The Golden Axe series, 87, 88, 89, stuff like that. They had a ton of things they could have turned back around and said, oh, this is how you foundationally put together a beat-em-up. The only thing we're hitting, instead of goons in a city full of gang members, is that we're hitting monsters. It's the same thing. It would have made that dismemberment system they so lovingly added a lot more fun, a lot more easy to perform, had they just simply looked back and went, here's how a beat-em-up works. Well, shit, we already have the template. We just need to copy it and tell the player what to do. I solidly put this on the developer. I solidly put it on the developer. It was absolutely them for not including the right information and not making clear what all the pickups did. And on top of it, the cherry atop the shit du jour. Finally, folks, we're not going to jerk you off anymore.
Because this is the other thing that system just egregiously makes this game more difficult than it needs to be.
Which is why they immediately ditched it for the sequel.
So this is a bar that's basically situated on the bottom left side of the screen, and it slowly drains as you play the game. And if it empties, your health starts to slowly deplete until you eventually die. And the only way to refill this meter is to kill more enemies. So I guess before I start yelling about things, how do you feel about the adrenaline meter?
All right. They do try to cover their ass. Callisto did try to cover their ass and say there's a reason for this. Why this is happening, why this exists. Yeah,
lay it out. I need to hear this.
Okay, technically what has happened is that Crowley not only unleashed these monsters, but he also unleashed a secondary virus that is slowly turning Londoners into more nightmare creatures. The only way to combat it at the moment is to keep your adrenaline spiked at all times, because for some reason, against all idea of how virology works. Again, this is a fantasy game. We don't have to play by any kind of goddamn real world rules. If you keep your adrenaline up, you keep the virus at bay. And that as the stages go on, you get more and more infected. The virus gets more powerful. You'll watch your meter drain faster and faster and faster and faster and faster to the point of the loop where you have to go and kill. You have no choice but to kill. You cannot do a pacifist run. You cannot run past enemies to save time and health. You must kill to keep that adrenaline meter topped at all times, which adds an additional layer of bullshit difficulty onto an already difficult game. Because you're essentially dying by inches every step of the fucking way. This went over like a wet fart in church. It absolutely bottomed out and made things worse, so much so that the first thing they did for the sequel was they got rid of it. The N64 port could turn it off. What does that fucking say to me? It says, this was a badly implemented system. This should have never been in. This should have never gotten past QA.
I don't give a shit what kind of lore explanation that they have for this fucking thing. It's fucking stupid. It's abysmal.
Mm-hmm. It's a hard time meter. It's a hard time meter. You have to get to the end of the stage before you die, before your own adrenaline meter runs out.
But it's as we talked about, like, I could go off about the map right now. We kind of already talked about how shitty the fucking stages are and the lack of, well, there is a map, but there may as well not be a fucking map.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
I guess, you know, I get they want you to keep fighting enemies. They want you to keep interacting with the stage and going through them and finding the next enemies and the secrets and all of that. But that doesn't work once you run out of enemies to fight because the levels are so large. Like half the time you won't even be able to find any.
You get turned around.
Yeah, you'll get turned around very easily. And like the stage assets all look exactly the same. But like if they wanted to implement a meter or something, if they wanted a gimmick that had a purpose, it should have been something in which it is a meter that you build something up to, like a power up or a skill that you gain once you filled the meter, which also encourages the player to interact with the level, to interact with the enemies. So it's like, yes, I want to beat up these enemies because I get this bonus or this stat boost or something, like experience or something.
Another thing at the time, a rage meter. Sure. You fill the thing and you get a super attack for a limited like 10 seconds or something like
Instead
that.
Instead of it's like sort of impermanent checkpoint marker or something. It's like very arcadey.
And also they didn't have a checkpoint.
Well, yeah, that too. But it's like, it's so fucking shitty and it's just so, like I said, it's arcadey and it doesn't feel like it belongs in this fucking video game. And yeah, the map is fucking horrible. I don't know why there's a map, because by the time you actually need to use it, you're probably already fucked and running out of meter. So
yeah. And on top of it, because it's an early 3D game, it's just coming off the platform era, there's platforming in 3D. We know this shit, at least maybe in modern systems we can look at it and say, look, I can make a judge of distance because they know how to do draw distance proper about. Not then. We knew that platforming in a fully 3D game worked about as well as a fucking sharp stick to the eye is what I meant to say there. It does not work. It does not help. It does not do anything. And if I could be in robust full health. And now I have to jump through a part of a stage to get to a monster. I need to keep that meter going. But now I have these three swinging giant hammers and I get clubbed halfway through
that
and I'm done.
That fucking sewer stage where like you have to be so fucking precise with your jumps or else you fall in the water is just, oh, dude, I was so fucking angry.
I know. And this game has boss battles and they all have a gimmick. I have nothing against having a gimmicky boss battle. I've read some reviews of it and people are like, man, of course, why would you have a boss battle in an area where the boss is going to get hurt? Because it's to make the player feel powerful. But they did have a couple of the boss battles. I'm sitting there going, huh? What the fuck is this? The Yeti in the church during the snowstorm. Just all of a sudden it starts snowing in the middle of the night in a city that's about to burn to the fucking ground. One stage full of snow. And it ends at a
I didn't Yeti. Question a lot of the boss fights just because I didn't have a lot of context for the story.
I'm just saying,
so
like,
I was kind of like, yeah, all right, mm-hmm. Here's just the obligatory boss fight, I guess. And I don't know. I hated all of them.
Yeah.
I hated every single one, especially the final boss.
I mean, the
boss.
Only one that
the final boss is fucking.
Yeah. I mean, the only one that thematically fit was the snake, the first boss that you fight in the sewer port. That one fit thematically. The dude that you have to like keep hitting the gate controls until you like squish him between some spikes. I'm not even sure what that was supposed to be. And the final boss, not going to get into too many spoilers, but the final boss is just a thing.
Guy that you have to squish in like the spikes or Iron Maiden or whatever the fuck you want to call it. I thought that was Crowley at first. I was like, is this the final boss fight?
Like, no, I think
like, who the fuck was that guy?
I think somebody said it's supposed to be Jack the Ripper, but that doesn't make sense historically because Jack the Ripper committed his murders in 1866 and the game's taking place
and then
in
he
1834.
Went to Chicago and built a giant murder hotel.
Yes. No, I've heard that one. There are some people that believe that H.H. Holmes might have been the Ripper and just moved to America. So we still don't technically know who did it. But that's the thing, is that you can use these historic concepts of having this vague sort of shit and cram it into a game. Nobody's going to question it except for, you know, a middle-aged man many years later going, wait a minute, walk that back, white man. We need to talk about this. But this is where we stand, is me now trying to go, and I know, especially the internet loves this shit where we just kind of go, well, this doesn't make any reasonable sense from people who, again, buy, you know, burn your asshole out, you know, ghost pepper Cheetos. Yes, sir. It doesn't make any sense. Glad you think this piece of media that you paid money for makes no goddamn sense. Good take on that one. But there are things that you have to sit there and go,
as far as all that stuff goes, working. I had no context. I was like, I'm just going to play this video game as video game and just base it off of the gameplay alone, which is like, again, completely unbalanced. There's really no rhyme or reason to the items you get. You don't even know what half of them do. It's a rough time. It was really super fucking difficult, and I was just overall very disappointed in just how everything played out with this game that I thought I was actually going to have a very good time with.
I mean, the problem is it is definitely a second string horror game in a system that, let's be honest, kind of got flooded with them after a while. There's many Silent Hills and Resident Evils and Fatal Frames and whatnot, where eventually stuff is going to, you know, it was like the 80s slasher phenomenon where, yeah, you had your Freddy Kruegers, you had your Jasons, you had your Michael Myers, but eventually you get your things like Pumpkinhead or, you know,
Leprechaun
or, God help us, things like, you know, Doll Man or
The Ghoulies,
a remake of The Blob, which was already a second string horror movie in the 50s when it came out. All the kind of like goofy ass, you know, things you can find on many channels across YouTube that talk about, you know, old movies and stuff like this and satirize them. But unfortunately, in video games, the 90s, especially late 90s, were very quickly becoming that era. I mean, look again, the year this game came out, 97. What was arguably one of the biggest games for the PlayStation 1 that came out in 1997?
Final Fantasy VII.
Final Fantasy VII, correct. It then now had to be sandwiched in between 1996 and 1998, which were the canonical release dates for RE1 and RE2. I know the Fatal Frames were dumped in there somewhere. A lot of stuff that was just way more successful and way more popular. And we have this poor little fighting game that Activision put their stamp on, said, you know, go out the door. Monsters. Yeah, we'll just, as long as we turn profit, we don't really give a shit. Just put it out there. And there were a lot of, I guess now we could say is amateur decisions.
Well, it's more or less, because Nintendo decided to stick with cartridges, that everybody was like flooding the PlayStation with video games because it was easier to develop for. And
yeah, exactly.
Make these larger games that more or less looked a little bit better than what the N64 had on offer. And that's why you just kind of, again, yeah, you get this flood of video games like this that are almost second string, third string video games. But at least the PlayStation was getting video games, unlike the N64, you know?
Yeah.
Phil, are you ready?
I'm ready.
This is a game that I would like to call Genre Mess. Now, as we've described or talked about earlier, rather, Nightmare Creatures is kind of a mess of a genre, right?
Yeah.
A lot of people call it survival horror. Not really a survival horror game. So I'm going to give you a list of 10 games that are classified as either survival horror or action horror.
Yeah.
And this is according to Wikipedia or just a brief Google search. So keep that in mind as well.
Okay. Because we know how fucking accurate Wikipedia and Google are.
So with that in mind, all you have to do is let me know whether or not the game is classified as action horror or survival horror.
Okay.
It's as simple as that. The first game, Alan Wake.
Wow. And again, I love Alan Wake. It is not, well, Google probably classifies it as survival horror. I don't. It's not, it's a thriller. It's not even a horror game. But I will say, based upon Google, I will say survival horror.
That is incorrect. I'm sorry.
It's action horror?
They classify it as an action horror game.
It's not that action-y.
I played it for a couple hours, and I'm like, yeah, this isn't... Yeah, it's like you said, not really either or. Really more, yeah, more or less like a thriller. I feel like that's a good description.
It's a run around the woods in the dark shooting at Stephen King enemies, so...
Yeah, yeah. So, for the second game that I have here... Remember, there are no trick questions in any of these quizzes ever. I never give anybody a trick question.
Of course not.
Resident Evil 2.
I know it is classified as survival horror. It is one of the pillars of it.
I'm going to give that one to you. It is classified as survival, but when you also search under action horror games, it also comes up. So...
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that reasonably.
All right, number three, Dead Space.
I always classified it as action horror more than survival, so I'm going to say action horror. I'll probably be wrong. Yep.
They do classify it as survival.
I've had so much ammunition at that game, I have gleefully stomped through the guts of so many monsters. I wasn't down anything. I didn't need to worry about surviving.
Yeah, the first four chapters, maybe. Mm-hmm. But from that point forward, you have like five, six different guns filled to the brim with ammunition.
The thing I always said, the second you get the stasis ability and the Ripper, which is your space chainsaw, I would just let enemies horde in, freeze them, and just walk in like I'm pruning the hedges.
Number four. The Evil Within.
I do believe it is actually technically classified as survival horror.
Is that your answer?
Yeah, I'm going to say it's my answer.
It is classified as survival horror.
Equal.
Shinji Mikami himself said
sure.
He was tired of action horror games. Mm-hmm. So I guess. I've never played it, but...
I still think it's a good game, but... I'm in the minority on that one. A lot of people just said, nah, we'll take the pass.
Okay, no trick questions for question five. The Evil Within 2.
Oh boy. While it has moments of horror, I would sadly almost put Evil Within 2 back into the thriller category. But I have a feeling it is going to be classified as action horror. Based on how it plays.
That, yeah, I'm giving it to you because when you search for action horror games, it pops up. But then when you look at Wikipedia, it says survival horror. So could go either way.
Yeah, it could go either way. I would say it's way more action heavy.
All right, number six. Again, no trick questions here. Bloodborne.
Oh, God, give me strength. This is based on what Wikipedia and Google think, right? Jesus Christ.
As we've learned, they are both very opposing to each other.
They're opposed to each other. They don't fit. It's a horror RPG. I'll say survival because maybe things get a little hard. I don't know.
It is an action horror game.
Sure.
Apparently.
Sure. Well, why not?
By the way, I think all of these have been previous episodes on your podcast. And
many of them have, yes.
I mean, more on that later. Mm-hmm. the next one here is Silent Hill 3.
That one is... Oh, boy. Like I said, if you ever listen to my show, I have a history with the Silent Hill franchise. Believe it or not, and I'll give this, Keith, I'm giving this to you as an exclusive. I actually did try and play Silent Hill 3. I got about half an hour in, and I ripped the disc out of my PlayStation, and I threw it the fuck away.
That's about my same experience with that game, too.
I was still livid after Silent Hill 2, but I saw it had connections to the first game, so I went, I will give it a try, because I love the first game so much. And I got about a half hour in, I stopped what I was doing, I pulled it out, I threw it away. I said, well, there's $50, I'll never goddamn get back. And that was terminated. But I'm going to say it's probably classified as survival horror.
It absolutely is. And I think, I mean, again, I haven't played it past maybe 30 to 60 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the legacy of the games leading up to it just lends itself to just, yeah, survival horror.
Right.
So why not?
Why the hell not?
The next game here, again, no trick questions. Phil, I'd never give you a trick question. Or it's not. These aren't even questions. These are just games. I don't even know why I keep saying trick question. Resident Evil 3, the original.
Fucker. Wunderbar. I know technically, I think it could be classified as either action or survival horror. I look at it much more in the action horror genre, but I'm going to split my difference and say survival horror, but could technically come up with either.
It is classified as survival horror. Also, when searched under action horror games, does come up. This next game, a game I have heard of, but don't have any experience in. So the next one here is Darkwood.
Darkwood's a strange one. I've heard of it. I know it's a scare title. But I think in a lot of cases, it's weird. It rides the edge of that survival crafting. It's a crafting game with scary elements. I'm going to say it probably comes up in survival horror checks only because the term survival gets lumped into crafting exploration.
That's some good fucking reasoning. That is correct.
Okay.
But it also does come up under action. So, I don't know.
Is this like things on Steam where it says add a tag and they just slap every single one on there? So you fed like hentai RPG action survival title, you know, and it's a shmup or something like that just because they're trying to get views.
I mean, it's Wikipedia and then like whatever search analytics are going on in fucking Google. Like, I don't know, man. And the last one, and again, no tricks. There are no tricks here. Game number 10, Resident Evil, the first one, 1996.
Definitely classified as survival horror.
Is that your final answer?
That is my final answer. Is considered one of the, it is not the true godfather of the genre, but it is considered one of the godfathers of the genre.
I'm sorry, Phil. Resident Evil is a Metroidvania.
Oh, shit. Well, yeah, that explains a lot then. I was wondering why Samus showed up in the game decades later. Now I know the answer.
Symphony of the Night is flat and old by comparison.
Yeah, exactly.
Remember exactly. The fuck they said. So with that, you got 6 out of 10, correct? So,
and not bad.
Is that decent? Yeah, that's not terrible.
Nah, not terrible. I could have probably
done
better.
You got the
trick
questions correct.
Mm-hmm.
This has been, what did I call this game again? Oh yeah, Genre Mess. So as far as the graphics go, we've kind of touched on them periodically throughout our conversation here.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess just overall, I feel like I sounded like came off as like really negative about the graphics earlier. Mm-hmm. And I, all told, I don't actually have a problem with like these polygonal ass graphics or anything like that. I do have a lot of nostalgia for this era of the PlayStation.
Right.
And for what it's worth, I do think some of the monsters look pretty okay.
Yeah.
I think there could have been like a little more variety. I thought it was funny because when I was looking at the artwork, like the box art for this game, there's a quote on the back of the box that says over 21 different creatures. And I'm like, I don't know. I think I've only seen like 8 or 9.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think there are that.
There might have been a few in the design documents that got buried, but you know.
Mm-hmm. And the game, the in-game cutscenes, the few that there are, they're okay. I mean, they're very of the time. Like, you know exactly what you're going to get out of this.
Oh, absolutely.
The only knock against I really have against this game is, again, when it comes to the gameplay and the exploration of the levels, just all of the level assets looking exactly the fucking same. The stages themselves are too big for the lack of creativity in this game. Mm-hmm. And so, again, very easy to turn around and makes this game kind of a miserable experience. But overall, like, I think everything here is fine. I think it's incredibly atmospheric. It's very gloomy. And there are like little subtle things in every level. Like you mentioned, the snowfall. Mm-hmm. There's a stage where you're running around a cemetery and there's leaves falling off of the branches.
Yeah.
Water splashing up on the docks and stuff like that. Fog rolling around.
Mm-hmm.
This game does a very good job of setting up its atmosphere. And I think that's great. But when it comes down to it mixing with the gameplay, like, that's when things get a little muddied.
Yeah, absolutely.
The one thing we actually haven't really mentioned, and we kind of talked about some of the noises that the monsters make, and that kind of goes into sound design and music. I think this kind of completes the ambiance of the game. Like, a lot of the game's sound design is actually, aside from the monster noises, a lot of like the ambient noises, like as far as like waves splashing or like the thunderclaps and stuff like that, are incorporated into the soundtrack. Because I did listen to this OST on YouTube just to kind of familiarize myself, because sometimes when I'm so frustrated with how the game is playing, it's very hard for me to pay attention to anything else.
Right.
So I think overall, I think the soundtrack and everything and the sound design is actually really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the sound design on this one, they did very well. They tried to keep it moody, atmospheric. You do get a kind of couple like rockish sort of tracks during boss fights, which kind of stand out a little bit like a sore thumb, but it's overall not bad. I'm going to have to break my rule here and say they did a better job with the OST on Nightmare Creatures than they did with Nightmare Creatures 2. Which, for the sequel, all they did was essentially license the entirety of Rob Zombie's Hellbilly Deluxe.
What?
For the sequel.
Oh, no.
And just would play that over all the cutscenes in the background, the opening noises, the opening cinematic, and then have a little bit of atmospheric music going on per stage. Which is why, if you look up Nightmare Creatures 2 on YouTube and attempt to watch a playthrough of it, it's going to be muted for a large chunk of the gameplay. Which, by the way, is only an American thing. They licensed it. So other games around the world. So around the world, they did not fully license the soundtrack of that Rob Zombie CD for Nightmare Creatures 2 around the world. So they had to fill in tracks in Europe and Asia.
And I wonder, because since... So I wonder who had the licensing deal for that record, because if I remember right, it was like in one of those Twisted Metal games, Twisted Metal 2 or 3.
Was
so
it Universal?
I wonder if they were just... I wonder. If they were like, well, we already have this, so we may as well use it.
Yeah.
Get our money out of it and put it in
It's been over 20
game.
Years since that album came out, so...
Right.
Fuck, I don't remember.
That just doesn't even seem to like fit... I mean, I guess I don't know when Nightmare Creatures 2 takes place. I don't know if they try to do the alternative history type of thing.
No,
again,
that one takes place in 1934.
Oh, okay. So it makes sense that heavy metal was around.
Yeah, 1934 London.
So at this point, all we have to do is summarize our thoughts and kind of mull over our entire conversation here and decide if Nightmare Creatures still holds up in 2023 and if we could recommend it today. And, you know, I think I'm going to let you cat this one off, Phil.
Okay.
I'll go first here and just be as concise as I can be and say that, like, this is an interesting game for its time. We talked a lot about the context of what this came out. There weren't a ton of games that were exactly like this. It was trying to do something a little different. It almost seemed, again, kind of a genre mashup of beat-em-ups and horror elements. And it was an interesting take that they did with the story. As corny as it kind of was, it still kind of had its... It took real-world history, and they tried to do their own thing with it. As far as the rest of the game goes, like, there were some interesting things that they were trying to do. And this is one of those things where, like, I wanted to celebrate everything that they were doing right with the game. But then, as I played it, I was astonished at how they also fucked up every single one of those things that they were trying to do along the way. And there's a lot of things in this game that I just don't think needed to be in here. They needed to explain what the hell the weapons were that you picked up along the way. They needed to make it obvious that you were going to be upgrading your weapon throughout the game. They really needed to focus on the combat. I think that is the one thing you're going to be doing throughout this entire game is beating up monsters, and it's just completely broken. I mean, it's unbalanced as all hell. You are either going to get ganged up on, stunlocked, and killed, or you're going to do it to the enemies. And as far as this game's difficulty goes, that's what it really amounts to, is just it just being completely fucking unbalanced, really fucking unfair. And then you've got the adrenaline timer on top of that, and you have these design elements in the stages. They all look the same. I feel like I'm beating a dead horse at this point. And I've got to leave some meat on the bone for you, Phil, because I feel like you might say a lot of the same things I'm going to say. But would I recommend Nightmare Creatures in 2023? I wouldn't. I think a lot of people want a remake of this game. I think we've even talked about being interested in a remake in this game. And whoever the hell has to make it, whoever has to get their ass into court and talk about who owns this game or whatever and put it out. This is a tried and true example of a game that does need to be remade, unlike something like the fucking Last of Us or something.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, I'm still salty about that one. Don't even fucking get me going.
Like, there's so many interesting things that this game was doing before something like Bloodborne came out, you know? So I wouldn't recommend this game, unfortunately. So, Phil, what do you think, man?
I do have a lot of the same complaints. Now, I am actually going to give it a light recommend, just because I think for a time capsule of the PlayStation 1, try it out. I do think is actually better than its sequel. Even if you don't get all the way through, and this is a hard game because I know by and large it's not going to be for everybody. Even for me, this was a slog to get through at times. I enjoyed it overall. It was trying to do a whole lot of shit. It failed on about 50% of them, which is unfortunate, but it's a matter of timing, the era it came out in, and I think the oversight was non-existent because Activision was like, fuck, we don't care, get it out the door. As long as it's enough to make money, we don't even care if it fucking works, just push it out. I do believe, now this is, again, this is just me personally speaking, that this is a game that is ripe for a remake. Especially considering we now know how beat-em-ups work, we know very well, and we can do a lot with the atmosphere to really double down and really make it something amazing. Now, I'm going to say something that some people may not like. Remakes don't need to be a one-for-one shot of the original game. That's what a remaster is for. Remakes can live in the spirit of the game. Take chunks out that didn't work, replace it with other things they did, add some new quality of life features for the modern day, and still be faithful to the original concept. Again, this is a concept I brought up when I talked about Resident Evil 3 remake. I think it is a good remake, and it follows about half, it tore it about half of what the original game was, and I thought it was to the better. I thought it made a good remake. What people wanted was a spiritual remastering, a one-for-one shot with modern graphics. They didn't get it, so they shit all over it. I do think Nightmare Creatures, at least the first one, not necessarily the second, is ripe for that spiritual remake. Take it, make it a genre combat game, really double and triple down on the mood, on the atmosphere. Make sure that you don't license the wrong kind of goddamn music. Come up with an original OST and maybe reduce it, you know, instead of being 20 stages, make it just a 10-15 hour game with varying lengths with balance to get through and get to the end. That's just my thought.
Yeah, I think I agree on all of those points that you made. I don't think, one of the things I was thinking about actually was, what if it was 2D instead of 3D?
That would be an interesting turn of events. Oh, that's actually a good idea.
You look at stuff like River City Girls, and that's the only example I have right now. People who listen to the show know that I'm not big into beat 'em ups. But I did play that recently, and that does have a lot of exploration in it, you know?
Yeah.
So you can create like a whole...
A 2D or 2.5D, you can absolutely do that. Yeah.
Yeah. You could create this entire map of London, but like in a 2D environment instead of 3D. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I played Vampyr, and that takes place in London in 1918. They basically broke it down to the like three or four districts, like Whitechapel, the docks, and a couple that just repeat over and over. And Nightmare Creatures did more expanse for the city of London than Vampyr, which came out in 2019 did almost, you know, 20 some years later. No, so there's a lot of good stuff you could do, but I think it's just, it needs to be remade, and it needs to be remade in a modern context.
But yeah, that pretty much wraps up Nightmare Creatures. I just got to thank you, Phil, coming on again, taking some time out of your day to talk about this with me.
Definitely. Thank you for inviting me. I'm always happy to be on. I'm always glad to be back.
Yeah, you always got a spot, man. So why don't you let people know where they can find deleted saves and half of the games that we even talked about today on the show.
Exactly. Because I can't shut up and I can't reference one thing without referencing 15 others, because that's what I do. Deleted Saves. You can find me anywhere you get your podcasts. Apple, Spotify, all the podcatchers, just look up Deleted Saves. I'm the one that looks like the little old 3.5 floppy cart with the little circle across through it on there. It says Deleted Saves. I'm easy to find. On Twitter, I am at Deleted Saves. On Instagram, I am deleted_saves_podcast. I have a Patreon at Deleted Saves Podcast. It is not required. It's as little as a dollar. If you want to throw in just to help keep the show going, I do appreciate it. I know the Patreon dollars are stretched thin this day, but I really appreciate each and every person who contributes and each and every dollar that I get. And I'm also here. I also have a Discord. It is Deleted Saves on Discord. I know I put forever ago on Twitter. I'll have to, I guess, put it back up. But yes, I also have a Discord in case you want to come in and personally yell at me for something I said. Not like I give a shit or may even respond, but it's there. If you want to talk with other people, you absolutely can.
Yeah, and of course, all those links are going to be in the show notes below. I say below. It's such a weird thing to say when you're not actually looking at a phone or a computer screen.
I know.
Yeah, I stick by Deleted Saves. People used to make the joke and be like, oh yeah, your show's only like 5 minutes long. All the episodes are nice and breezy. You, sir, have been taking up more of my time lately.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I've been drifting into the 20 to 30 minute time period. I know. I've broken all my own rules. I should know.
No,
better.
But it's great. The longer episodes, I'm down for that. It just how far you've come in the show as well, and just the way your narrative plays out and everything, the stories you tell on the show are really good. It's, you know, I wouldn't say it's a nostalgia cast like a lot of other podcasts out there, but there's a little bit of that. And then you tend to take things into the more modern route, kind of like what we did today. So
yeah, I also love when I get some people said, man, you really overshared it. I didn't know you had daddy issues. I'm like, that wasn't the fucking point, but okay, glad you got that out of it.
Well, that's the thing too. Like you do have some very, like, there were some very, I guess, emotional, even for me. I was just like, oh, wow. Okay. Like, I can relate to some of that. So
oh, thank you, man. And obviously your show is fantastic. I listen to it every chance I get every week, and you do amazing stuff over here. I value that a lot.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So with that, I mean, everybody knows where to find me. You all heard of that at the top of the show in the monologue there. As far as the Ghoulcade goes, we're rolling on. And next time on the show, I'll be joined by patron Van Fernal as we talk about the Super Famicom exclusive, a game that we mentioned earlier in this very episode, Clock Tower.
I'm looking forward to that one.
It's going to be interesting. So until then, what the fuck is my sign off? Take care of your, what is it? Oh yeah, take care of yourselves. And always remember, it's okay to like Clock Tower. I mean, it's okay to like a video game.
Words on the Main Quest podcast.
1 to 10, was this better or was this more rough than the Retro Olympics?
I think it was overall better. There were a couple for the Retro Olympics that are just like, again, what was that one we got stumped on? The computer hardware one?
Yeah, that one. I also like that there was a Bloodborne question in there for the retro game Bloodborne.
Mm-hmm.
Secret Levels.
Yeah, the one where we spent talking about discussing the album covers and who did the art for them.
Yeah.
And the one of the guys like busts in like, are you still talking? I'm like, yes, I am, sir. And I'm going to keep going.
I mean, we're throwing a little bit of shade, but I mean, of course we are.
No, it's okay. It's all good.
Yeah, it was all good.